ball into the top of the 18, fired away and take it in. The equalizer. What an assist. Sent to the top of the 18. And ricocheted through here for a second time. Headed home. It's Clementa. Vegas waiting here. That'll be the third.
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. It's Aaron once again here with Peter and John following a 1-1 week for Oakland, a win against San Diego Loyal, a loss against Sacramento Republic, our hated enemies. We'll talk about both of those games, look ahead to the San Antonio match this weekend, and talk about the stadium news that's come out this week. So let's get into it. Let's talk about these past two games this past week. I think the last time we spoke, we were basically just discussing the coaching change, and our thinking was we made two predictions. One, we wouldn't see much change in tactics. Both of you guys were very adamant we're not going to see a whole lot of change in tactics. The other is that we thought this was going to get worse before it got better. And I think when we had that discussion, we weren't even considering the fact that our leading scorer was going to be on paternity leave for both of these matches. And it didn't actually get worse before it got better. It got pretty good right off the bat with a 3-1 win against San Diego Loyal before it kind of fell apart against Sacramento. But we have another very tough matchup coming up. So it's good, I think, that we've gotten the 3 points from the San Diego Loyal match. Peter, I think you mentioned this last podcast. Basically, 3 points from these three games is probably the goal, because this is going to be one of the tougher stretches that any team has to play at any point in the USL season. And we've got the 3 points. So anything that comes this weekend is by that way of thinking, gravy, which is great. But let's start with the San Diego match. San Diego got the scoring underway. Evan Conway had a 24th-minute goal, but Juan Carlos Azocar scored in the 28th minute. Emra put home a header in the 38th, and then Eduardo Rito put the exclamation point on that victory in the 88th minute. The stats suggest actually that San Diego might have had the upper hand, but the only stat that matters at the end of the day is goals in the back of the net. So as a great win from Oakland, Peter, what were your impressions of that game? I mean, it's the first game with the new head man. Did anything strike you about that game?
Well, I mean, it doesn't look like he changed the system in any meaningful way. It looked like the boys were hungry. Maybe that's a change that Nolo Delgado can bring, is just getting the team fired up to play. You know, I thought that in the first half, Charlie Dennis looked the best he's looked all season. And it's easy to say that in one where he has an inch-perfect assist to Juan Carlos Azocar. Generally speaking, he was tracking back. He was pretty effectively defending from the front. And, you know, I thought that he more than anyone else, but the whole team looked like they were out there to play.
Yeah, you know, I'll expand on that. The system didn't look like it overtly changed, especially in the first half. But a change that I did like in the second half was bringing more defenders in. I think he did change the system more early than what we have seen under Juan Guerra. And I think that kind of has come back to bite Guerra, especially in his time in Oakland, where maybe some changes were too late or they just weren't that overtly different. That being said, even though they sat in I think the commentator said it was a 5-4-1, Root still looked pretty good going forward. They had a nice counterattack, really turned a lot of turnovers upfield, and used their runners on the side. I mean, and that was the difference there with Eduardo Rito's goal. I think San Diego was really pressing high up there. I think they had all of their defensive players before midfield. So Memo just had to turn it upfield, send the long ball. And it was spot on, as Memo has done pretty consistently this year and is the opportunities that he's had.
I want to jump off on that point about a shift to a more defensive system, because I think that's exactly right. I think they were very aggressive in the first half. And it kind of came back to bite them a little bit with the opening San Diego goal, that they were very aggressive, pushing up from the back, that Murad and Clemente were, I think, basically following the two San Diego strikers around. And that's where the space was for Evan Conway and that run that led to the opening goal. But they played in the second half like they had a lead to protect. It did feel like they knew they had something to fight for, and they were going to fight for it. Because it was a lot more sitting back. And I think this is probably the recipe, not the tactics recipe, but the game flow recipe, if this team is going to be successful going forward. Not a high press, but a medium-high press in the first half, because we've got a lot of athletes. We've got guys who are very skilled. Get a lead, and then sit back and protect it. As you know, you can put enough guys between the ball and the net, and you know if it gets past them, you've got one of the better shot stoppers in the league. I think it is exactly how this team needs to think about matches, at least against the teams above them in the table going forward.
Yeah, I mean, we could even expand on the footnote of the Juan Guerra era of the Roots was, as we've pointed out to everybody, the 8 games where they've dropped points from a winning position. When they're sitting 2-1, you know, that's definitely on my mind. And they were able to pull it out. I mean, of course, we could thank Mr. Paul Blanchett for, you know, standing on his head. I mean, I think it was 9 or 10 saves. 5 of them were dives. You know, it really is a testament to what he brings. But it was nice to see Roots kill a game and not give a game away, which was the hallmark of sort of the run-up to this point.
I loved the Diaz for Janssen substitution. In the 61st minute, I mean, you're not exactly making a defensive substitution to protect a lead in the 61st minute, but I thought it worked and it gave an outlet. And I mean, you're certainly vindicated when Diaz hits the assist for that Rito goal. You know, the sort of like the cheapest assist you'll ever get. But also, I mean, the impressive part of that assist was winning the ball and then clearing it in a way that was productive. I like that, and I like getting minutes for Diaz. I'm becoming more open to the idea of Diaz as our preferred left back, and if we're going to play Esokar, he should be a forward.
So that was a great start to the Noah Delgado era. The follow-up, maybe less good. I think in San Diego is a quality opponent. They played very well, but Oakland was clinical and they were disciplined. And in the Sacramento game, I think Sacramento had it in. They came out with a mindset, we are going to impose our will on this game. And I thought for the first half hour, Oakland played a slower, less physical game than Sacramento, while at the same time just leaving way too much space between the lines. And that last part, I think, is frustrating because it's happened every single time that Oakland has played Sacramento this year, that there's been a long stretch of the game where Sacramento's basically split Oakland apart and had the run of the midfield. And, you know, that's basically where the goal came from, a set piece, but I think it was coming anyway. Sacramento hit the post 3 or 4 times in the first half, I think. It was sort of shocking after that San Diego match, but one of the things about playing like that is that it's very difficult to sustain it over 90 minutes. The tide did turn. I thought the adjustment made in this game was to drop Janssen back. He'd been been pushed very far forward for the first part of the game. They dropped him back, and that helped Oakland get control of the game. And I thought for the last half hour, actually, Oakland probably had the upper hand, although they generated almost no chances out of that. They had some opportunities. They needed to be more clinical, but Sacramento really showed why they are one of the contenders for the Western Conference crown. And as disappointing as it is to lose to Sacramento, I don't think we can be too upset with it coming off that San Diego loss. But again, I'll start with you, Peter. What were your overall thoughts about the Sacramento performance?
I barely remember the Sacramento performance. I don't. Did anything of note happen?
Not have happened.
The Roots didn't look as good. I mean, I recognize my bias here, but I thought that Sacramento looked bad. Like, they're not a very good team. And admittedly, they won, and they're higher in the table than the Roots. And I have some choice words for the Oakland Roots this season, too. But I'm just not impressed by Sacramento. They have so many good attacking players who seem to do nothing a lot of the time.
Yeah, they don't have a focal point for that attack, but they have such good attacking midfielders, and their wingbacks are... I mean, their wingbacks have dictated, I think, two of the three matches between these two teams this season, and that's kind of shocking given how good Oakland's are. But Gurr and Viader are pretty talented, and if there was anything, you know, any consistent end product on this team, we wouldn't be talking about are they going to get a home game in the first round of the USL Cup. It would be are they going to be first, second, third seed. I understand where you're coming from, although the stats say they kind of blew Oakland off the pitch.
Did it feel like that watching that, though? I mean, how many big chances did they have?
I think for the first half hour, Sacramento could have put the game away. And then Oakland sort of clawed back into it. And like I said, I think Oakland had the upper hand for the last half hour, but they didn't have enough to break Sacramento down at that point. I mean, Sacramento played, I thought, a pretty disciplined game.
Yeah, you know, that's how I would describe it, is I thought Sacramento played a very disciplined game, especially in the first half. I mean, when I was in the stands, it felt like every time Oakland got past midfield, they were able to isolate whoever had the ball with three defenders on them and get a foot on it and turn it upfield. I mean, it felt like it was counterattack after counterattack for Sacramento, and they were able to get the ball off a guy and then play it in the space and run towards goal. I mean, as opposed to their offense, I think their defense is what got the job done, was really staying disciplined and putting a lot of guys on number nine, Formella. I think that was a big difference in San Diego and Sacramento, where there were times when Formella could get the ball one-on-one, hold it off, and find the open man. And when the ball played to Formella against Sacramento, there were two, three guys on him every single time.
I think that is a great observation, personally. I think, you know, Formella was doing – he was playing as a central striker, but he was doing a lot of what you might call the dirty midfield work in both matches. But – he had time and space against San Diego. And I think for that reason, we saw Oakland put together some of the better passing combinations they've put together all season. And you're right, he had no time on the ball against Sacramento. And it killed Oakland's attempted buildups, I think, a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the same time, you know, it still feels like we have not seen the best of Janssen. We see the play time and time again where he's cutting in from the left side, getting isolated one-on-one with a guy and able to find the shooting lane. That's what almost got the goal in the first half. I forgot what minute it was, but he is one-on-one with the right back and turns more centrally, gets a shot off, and it's off of Vitiello's hands. And Formella was right there. You wonder if he's there, does he get a foot on it at least? Because it was a phantom ball. The ball went right over Formella's foot. I mean, and that's not to knock Formella. I definitely think he's better on the wing. But he's held his own in the nine, but you wonder what the difference could have been there.
I think it's interesting to note that Formella had the most shots in the game.
Yes.
Two shots on target, which is two-thirds of the Oakland Roots shots on target. The Roots attack could have been a little better in that game. It's a hot take about a shutout, but here we are.
Yeah, you don't see many of those. This is not a team that has clean sheets kept against it on a pretty regular basis. In fact, our next match is against another team that was unable to keep a clean sheet. Against Oakland, the San Antonio FC. Do they have a nickname? I almost wanted to call them the Spurs, but presumably that name is taken.
You're combining two different things, yeah.
Their logo is pretty much the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, it has a spur on it.
They're owned by the Spurs.
Oh, that explains that. Okay.
Well, then.
Do you guys not read the fucking preview posts?
Only for typos. Okay, so we're playing the San Antonio Baby Spurs. Last time we met, middle of June, in San Antonio, Joseph Nane got the scoring going with a 29th minute goal, but Sam Adeniran equalized just before halftime, and then there was nothing in the second half. So it was a 1-1 draw. So this is, I mean, San Antonio is sitting at the top of the Western Conference right now. They have not, the results recently have not been reflective of that position. They lost 3-0 away to San Diego Loyal before getting home wins against Loud United, which we do not give you any credit for, and then a home win against Las Vegas Lights, which is, you know, that's okay. A home draw against RGV Toros, and they lost in their last match. They lost away to Indy 11. So the results recently have not been as they haven't been as imperious, let's say, as they were before. Right before that, they had a stretch of six consecutive wins. They had won 7 out of 8. The only match they didn't win in that stretch was actually the draw against Oakland. So we've seen them before. We saw them in a bit of a purple patch and held our own. And now they're coming to Oakland. So it seems like this is a good opportunity for Oakland to get a result. But this is still going to be a very tough game. So, John, let's start with you now. What are you expecting from Oakland in this game after these first two Noah Delgado coached matches? Do you think we're going to see any new wrinkles? What kinds of stuff do you want to see on the pitch?
I like to see Roots play their possessive style and take more shots on target. I think, yeah, you know, you got to put the ball on net to win the game. And I mean, obviously, but that didn't occur really against Sacramento. You know that San Antonio is a tough defensive side. It's going to be tough. I mean, let's be real. They need to win right now. It's hard to say if a tie is enough.
Yeah, the San Antonio defense is really good. But, you know, I mean, the Roots have some pretty good results, pretty good offensive results against good defenses so far this season. I mean, looking at the 3-1 win over San Diego and the 3-3 draw against Sacramento a month ago, or almost 2 months ago now, like, the Roots can score even against good defenses. I will say, I know it's getting close. The Roots don't have to win this game. Aaron was saying earlier that I was saying that that I had said that the goal was 3 points from these three games. And honestly, I was mentally preparing myself for 0 points from these three games. And the possibility that wouldn't put the Roots out of the playoff run, because there's still 6 games left after that. And not all these teams in the Western Conference are going to put it together.
I feel like the bottom two playoff spots are still very much up for grabs.
Yeah.
Right now you have Vegas on 37 points, El Paso on 37 points, and then LA Galaxy 2 on 36, Oakland on 33. But El Paso has been struggling for quite some time. Vegas has lost one of its top players to the MLS. I mean, who knows if they're really in a position to put together enough results. If, you know, assuming Oakland and LA Galaxy 2 and maybe RGV Toros can put pressure on them, who knows if they have enough results without one of those teams stumbling. It does feel like Oakland is capable of it, because we've been watching them all season put together better than average performances against the top teams and just not come away with 3 points. It would do wonders for my blood pressure if they won this match, but I don't think it's a necessarily a requirement for the playoffs. And now to help us better understand San Antonio FC, we have with us Harry from several different podcasts, about one about U.S. soccer, one about soccer in the San Antonio area, whose names escape me. Harry, if you want to just plug those before we get into this weekend's match.
The main one that we do is SA Soccer Roundtable that covers the San Antonio scene here.
Very cool. So one of the things we've been talking about is that San Antonio's recent results haven't been as imperious as they were in the stretch before this. Now, would you say that these results are not reflective of San Antonio's performances, that like they're still playing at a high level, they're just not getting the results in the last few weeks, or have they started stumbling?
I don't know if I would call it stumbling, but they're definitely not playing at the top. They don't have the same momentum. I think the biggest issue right now is they're dealing with injuries on the back line. Garcia's out, which is one of our key players. And since he's been out, unfortunately, we've noticed the defense has leaked a little bit more. And then, of course, with San Antonio, if they don't score, they don't win. I mean, that seems kind of crazy to say, but every match they've lost, they haven't been able to find the back of the net. And but they've also been lucky. You know, you look at the RGV match, you look at Loudon, you know, they've had some matches where Lady Luck's been on their side, and, you know, it's a long season. Sometimes you get the results, sometimes you don't, but I won't lie to you, as a San Antonio fan, you know, you're like, okay, hey, they need to pick it back up. Hopefully, you know, for us, hopefully it starts this weekend, you know, out in Oakland.
So the one San Antonio player that I was more familiar with going into the season is Sam Adeniran, who was playing with Tacoma last season. We're really familiar with. I see that even coming in midseason, he's San Antonio's leading goal scorer. What have you seen from him? Does he lead the line for San Antonio? Does he play up front by himself? Does he have partners? How does that work?
No, San Antonio is running three up top with Sam, with Patino, and typically Dylan. They run three up top, and he's just been able to come in and, you know, been able to find the back of the net. Dylan, you know, was kind of our first half, you know, hero when it came, you know, comes to the offensive side for there, but he's kind of dipped back a little bit. Patino had some health issues, but he's starting to get into good health. This last week was the first time he's played a full 90 minutes. But Sam, like I said here, you know, it's you know, you got to give credit to San Antonio FC. They knew they needed another attacking piece, and they reached out to Seattle and got him on loan. So, and he's came in, and, you know, the kid's got talent. You know, and that's probably why, you know, Seattle wanted him to play above MLS Next Pro, and, you know, to get a little bit more challenging, you know, with, I'm assuming, hopes that he'll be able to play with Seattle next year in MLS.
Harry, if San Antonio has an Achilles heel, what would you say it is?
If they get down, early, and it can lead to a little bit of frustrations, you know, because they play on that line as it is. But this team, if they get down and they get frustrated, it seems like it builds on them. You know, the whole old adage, if San Antonio can, you know, can get that goal, you know, they get that momentum going, and they've had great success on the road. So it'll be interesting to, you know, kind of, you know, up in Oakland, if Oakland comes in and smashes them in the mouth early, how they'll respond. I think the defense will keep them in the game, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's, you know, the offense, and then, you know, the chippy fouls, I guess you could say, you know, from San Antonio, that, you know, they play on that line. And like I said here, it comes down to if a team can come in, get that early goal and kind of boss San Antonio around a little bit. That's been kind of the key. You know, that's how Phoenix has won. You know, Phoenix swept the series, you know, I think it was, what, 5-0, you know, combined goal score between the two games, because they came in, got that early lead, and were able to hold off, you know, the San Antonio pressure for that here.
And if San Antonio wins, what do you think systematically they're doing well?
It's the pressure. The back line's always going to be solid, but it's the pressure, being able to, being able to turn teams over and get the goals, because, you know, San Antonio typically doesn't hold the possession. They're okay with like a 60-40 split along those lines, or even worse. But, you know, to me, where, you know, if San Antonio, to me, it comes down to number one, and this is, you know, with, you know, Oakland's the same way. If San Antonio can put the ball in the net, you know, obviously that makes the game much easier. I think both teams have solid defenses for that here. So to me, it comes down to that pressure, you know, that San Antonio applies. You know, can the Roots absorb it and take advantage of it, you know, when they have the opportunities.
If you had to pick one or two players of the season for San Antonio, who would they be to date?
Oh, it has to be Mitchell Tanner. To me, he's the MVP. I know that seems kind of crazy as a center back, but, you know, he's led the team. He's scored huge goals along those lines here.
That's good news for Peter, because he's clearly just asking you to write his preview for him, and it's a lot easier to write jokes about a guy named Mitch Tainter.
That was actually my follow-up question. Do you think that Mitchell Tainter knows his name is funny?
I've never asked that.
if you get a chance.
But no, he's a great guy. Like said here, I know he spent some time in Sacramento. You know, we got him on a loan, or, you know, he signed with us 1 year, went back to Sacramento, and then they did a loan swap with Emil Cuello, and Mitchell Tanner came back to San Antonio, and, you know, hopefully he never leaves unless it's, you know, to a higher league. Mitchell's a great guy, you know, just like, you know, several guys, you know, in the league here. But to me, you know, he is the best player, I think, on San Antonio. Maybe not talent wise, but he's probably having that best year career wise. The second player, I know Jordan Ford gets a lot of the media coverage, you know, being the goalkeeper. But I'm going to go with Mohamed Abu in the midfield. You know, he's a defensive midfielder. But he kind of controls that. He's that quarterback, that sneaky on the offense, you know, where if he's on, if his passing is on, he can set up a lot of things for that here. And, you know, so I know Tanner, I think, is the obvious. You know, Fars probably gets more pub, but to me, like I said, Abu is one, you know, for the midfield that I think a little bit underrated. But when you actually look at, you know, what he brings and the value that he brings, yeah, and I know USL John with USL Tactics has highlighted him a few times this year, but to me, he's the kind of unsung hero for San Antonio.
You know, if Oakland wins, what areas do you think they're able to exploit on the pitch there?
So, to me, it depends on who's back on the back line. If Manley's back, which we've heard reports, you know, from the guys that cover the team, that, you know, he's back in practice now. Whether he starts or gets playing time, you know, we'll have to see. Garcia, I believe, will still be out. I haven't seen him at practice, you know, is the reports that we've heard. So our back line is still going to be a little bit makeshift, but they do have the depth there, and, you know, we just got off a turf field, and I know the Roots field's a little bit different. You know, just in speaking with people, it's a little bit bouncy, I guess you could say, is you know, from what I've heard for that here. So it'll be interesting being on another turf field to see how San Antonio responds to that. But to me, like I said here, it comes down to, you know, the Roots are very, very defensive. I think if San Antonio can get on that, get the early goal, I think that, you know, that could pose problems for the Roots. But if the Roots are able to hold it scoreless, you know, through the first half, and, you know, come out of out of halftime, maybe get an early goal, then I think the pressure builds on San Antonio. The good thing for San Antonio, the good and bad thing, I guess you could say, is we're fairly comfortable with the lead in the West, you know, so if they drop a game here or there, you know, it's not going to impact them, or you guys are literally fighting for, you know, your playoff lives right now. So I think you guys will have that motivation, you know, playing at home along those lines. I know San Antonio's only got, what, two more road games after this, which are against Eastern Foes. So this for San Antonio, you know, I think they've already won 10 road matches. I know they would love to get 11. But Oakland's a tough team. You know, very impressed with Oakland. Wish you guys would have beat Orange County last year in the playoffs. You know, when you guys lost some PKs like we did, but you know, it is what it is. Huh?
So I actually want to build on what you were just saying, because I think this is a sort of interesting split that San Antonio has eight wins and three draws at home and only one loss at home. And so in a sense, they have a better away record with 10 wins and four losses. I think I have those numbers right. Do you feel more comfortable when you watch San Antonio at home? Do you have a preference?
Oh, you always want to be at home. You know, but San Antonio is averaging, looking at FB Ref here, 2.25 points at home and 2.14 points on the road. So I think how San Antonio is built is they're an experienced team, you know, with fringe MLS talent up and down the roster. So whether it's home or away, I don't think that really intimidates. I know Coach Marcina doesn't adjust his tactics at all as far as that. And I think that comes with that pressure. You know, for the home. Now, if you look at goals allowed, you know, they've scored 18 on the road. You know, San Antonio scored 18 on the road and allowed 14, where at home they've scored 25 and allowed 8. So defense obviously is a lot better at home than on the road. And I think part of that comes to just, you know, hey, playing on the road's a lot tougher, you know, just in general, you know, for that here. So to me, you know, like I said here, going out to California one last time, you know, I think they did get, you know, they lost to Sacramento 1-0 when they went out there. They got rolled by San Diego, who you guys beat last week, I believe, is what it was.
Yeah.
So I think the only match that they won was against Monterey Bay, and that was a little bit early. Yeah, they won 3-2 in Monterey in mid-June.
Look, it's tough to win, you know, against Monterey Bay.
Hey, they're all right.
Let's talk about postseason for a second. Not necessarily the USL Cup, but I'm curious about your perspective on this as someone who, I think the Copa Tejas teams are more likely to have blood enemies as rivals than pretty much anyone else in the league. We have heard on the broadcast the last few times that everyone in the USL should rally around the Sacramento Republic in their Open Cup final match against Orlando City. And I think the official position of the blog is fuck that shit. I'm just curious, does San Antonio have a rival that if they got to the US Open Cup final against an MLS team, you'd be like, no, we're rooting for I will root for FC Cincinnati over whoever this is.
RGV would probably be that team. Austin Bold would have been the team, but, you know, RIP to Austin Bold. And Fort Worth, where are you at? You know, rights were sold a year ago, nothing from you. But I guess this is where I kind of come down on it, is even if RGV was playing, just for the, you know, how San Antonio's been burnt by MLS, for that here, you know, with them deciding to go to Austin before, you know, and didn't tell anybody with the Austin clause, you know, when Precourt bought the Crew. I want to see a USL team in CONCACAF Champions League, because I think once that door's open and, you know, and I dislike Sacramento, just, you know, they're not a team I enjoy. They're, you know, amen. I don't think they play very well. From a USL aspect, if they could go up there, and obviously I don't have expectations for them to advance or anything along those lines, but show that USL teams can be a competent team I think that opens up the doors, you know, maybe not a direct qualification, but I think with the new, you know, the new CONCACAF Champions League, you know, I think what 75-80% of the bids are MLS / Liga MX. And to me, you know, like I said here, I think, you know, and this is my opinion, I think USL is probably the third, fourth best league in CONCACAF, you know, top to bottom. And for them not to have an opportunity to be able to go, I won't lie, I'll be rooting for Sacramento. I just want to beat MLS. I won't lie to you.
Well, that's fair. We can understand wanting to beat MLS, even if we're going to have to work to not hold this rooting for Sacramento thing against you.
I can't root for MLS. I just can't.
Well, Harry, thank you for giving us the inside scoop on San Antonio FC. I appreciate you joining us.
No, it was a pleasure, guys.
In case you win the Wendy's giveaway, do you want to stick around while I do this drawing?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So,
I will say kudos to you guys for having the Wendy's drawing, and I know that may be coming out of pocket and not an official sponsor, but that's a hell of a
We'll be getting into it soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to keep calling this the Wendy's giveaway until we get the cease and desist letter. The Oakland Roots drew a red card in their away match to Detroit City, calling my bluff about this Wendy's giveaway. And I said anyone who retweeted or quote tweeted the last podcast episode would get their name put into a drawing. So we're going to see there's a 1 in 6 chance that the winner of this is my wife, and there's a 1 in 6 chance that the winner is John Como. So we're hoping to God it's not one of those people. Okay. You guys can see the hat. I'm looking a different direction.
This is definitely perfectly random. Okay. Board.
Harry, are you going to make me pay you $20 or can I pull one of our actual followers?
No, you can pull one.
Okay. Now a 1 in 5 chance that this is Dr. Root's blog. Okay, it's not. So the winner is at Super Ensalada on Twitter. So I will be Venmoing you $20, and you are obligated to send us a picture of the Wendy's you buy with it.
Right. That's good. We avoided the pitfalls of giving the $20 to a San Antonio fan or a Roots blog affiliated individual.
So what's your go-to at Wendy's if you do go to Wendy's?
I haven't lived close enough to a Wendy's in long enough.
Chicken nuggets.
Yeah, the spicy chicken sandwich.
The spicy or the regular?
Spicy.
Spicy. Yeah. What's yours?
I like the bacon. I go with the Baconator.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, too.
That was our other name for this.
I don't go there often, but I'm like, well, if I'm going to go, it's, you know.
Yeah, if I'm going to go, I might as well get a heart attack out of this. Like, let's not pussyfoot like around.
It's like going to In-N-Out Burger and getting, you know, the double animal style.
Right.
So, you know, it's...
All right. Well, thanks, Harry.
All right, Harry.
So one thing I thought was interesting there is the reference to the field, which is a great segue to the big news of the week, which is that Oakland is looking for a new stadium. Personally, I'm pretty excited about that. I don't know how you guys feel, but I think that's great. It seems like for all the pablum that was in the article in the Merc, that really this is just a matter of Oakland needing its own place because it's difficult to schedule the routes around the Laney College football team as it is. And, you know, they clearly want to drive eyes to see Project 510, and that's not happening with them playing out in, I think they're playing in Fremont. They played in Fremont this year. Ohlone College is right under Mission Hills Park, which I've been to, and it is not easy to get to. And I can't imagine driving all that way to watch the Roots, much less 510. Plus, you got the women's team coming online. So it would be nice to have a place where everyone, all of these teams are playing in the same venue. People know how to get there. People are used to getting there. And so that maybe you drive some of this. We have a great fan base for the Roots. Maybe some of that starts to translate to the other clubs that are a part of Oakland Roots SC. John, are you hearing anything about this push other than what we heard in the Mercury? I mean, that was fairly informative on its own, but do you have anything to add to it?
I mean, just to nothing substantial to add, just it is a step in the right direction. We know based off our conversations with people at the team that this has been something they've been eyeing for some time. It's been a goal of theirs for probably since moving into Laney. You know, they knew that this was never a permanent home just based off of the issues that they have had. I mean, they're the second tenant. That's been a problem. I mean, it's an issue with most teams in the league. As I just mentioned before, you know, playing second fiddle to the football team is an issue. You know, it makes things difficult for scheduling. You don't want to play no games at home for a whole month. It does mess with the fluidity of the team and building that chemistry. You know, there's been issues, even with tailgating, you know, or no tailgating, as the people in the supporters groups have said. You know, they've always wanted to make a home their own. You see some of these nice stadiums in the USL that have big draws. You look at Sacramento, you want to try and build something comparable to them and see what it can do for bringing people in.
I gotta say, I mean, I was already like on board with the idea of leaving Laney. You know, Laney is a pretty good venue, but like on your game day experience as a fan, you don't necessarily see the reasons why Laney is a problem, right? And so, you know, I was surprised on Twitter at the number of people who were disappointed about the Roots leaving Laney. And I think that disappointment is only particularly merited if the Roots end up moving to a place that's harder to get to than Laney College. But, you know, you have to think that the team knows to look for a place that's easy to get to.
I think that's where a lot of that frustration is coming from. That's one of the big parts. It's right downtown. It's really easy to get to, you know, whether you're driving, coming in on the bus, coming in on the train, like you can get there pretty easily. It's going to be hard to replicate that, but not impossible. The other part, of course, is that, you know, Laney is, it's part of Oakland, but I think at some point, if this club is going to be as successful in as many ways as it can be, it wasn't going to work. For the reasons you were stating, John, they like you can't have three different clubs playing second fiddle to the Laney College football team at that stadium and expect to, you know, have the logistics work out. It's just not going to happen.
Well, I mean, let's be real. It's not even the biggest problem. The biggest issue is the turf.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Roots didn't get any nationally telecast. All right. There is a reason why a lot of these teams are complaining about playing at Laney. I mean, yeah, we say go screw them, but the league takes an issue with it. And you want to try and look better in the league's eyes. And having a full grass pitch, you know, that's what you got to get done. You want a location that people are going to want to play at. And you know, it comes into the players' minds too. You know, they have to buy into the fact that they're playing on this bouncy Blues Clues pitch. Yeah.
Anyways, I got to say, well, two observations. One on that, I mean, I think that you're right about, you know, being able to control the stadium. I mean, I think that the lighting on home TV broadcasts is terrible. And we very rarely see it because we go to home games. But you watch the highlights, and there are times that you can't tell what's going on. It's a little embarrassing.
I will add to that. I take photos at the game, and it is fucking difficult, okay? I can speak for the rest of the photographers at the game and say we would love some goddamn updated lights because we have to crank up our cameras to the highest settings. My pictures look like shit at the end of the day. I want some nice you know, I have a pretty good camera and it still comes out very fuzzy sometimes. So please, I want some new lights.
The other factor that has been that has really been weighing on me since it was brought to my attention is that our good friend Andy King with the Orange County, the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, the Orange County podcast, was saying like they don't even like Orange County shares their facility with the, you know, the county or the city of Irvine, and they're at risk of losing their stadium because Galaxy got mad that there's another professional team in their turf and they're trying to run them out. And, you know, I don't think that exact problem is going to happen with Laney, but that's what happens when you don't, you know, you're not the master tenant on the lease, or you don't actually own the property or whatever. And I don't want the Roots to end up in that situation.
I mean, it's going to take a long time. Nothing construction-wise gets done in a reasonable amount of time in the Bay Area, but you know, it is something to look forward to. But it's way down the road. We don't have to worry about it for now. We have a home match at Laney against San Antonio FC. We'll be back after that match to discuss what is hopefully, you know, a very good result that has set Oakland up for a successful end of the season playoff kick. Until then, up the Roots.